According to the last hunger count survey back in 2012 that was done by the food banks across Canada, there are almost a million people that are accessing food banks on a regular basis every month.
Mm.
So it is a...
That's across Canada?
That's across Canada. Mm-hmm. And that represents, I believe, the figure, and I'm not really up on the figures, but I think something like 2.5 million people in Canada are considered to be living in poverty. And I know that recent OECD numbers, which are international numbers, obviously, say that something like 1 in 7 Canadian children live in poverty.
Mm.
So if you can imagine, that's about 15% of Canadian children. I'm not sure what the number would be in Guelph, how that would relate, but I suspect it might not be terribly different from that. It may be a little lower, but there would be a significant number.
Hmm. And you were talking about the breakfast programs in school. So this is something that it would be fairly common.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How important are those programs?
I think they're critical to maintaining the health and the learning environment for children. And one of the things I think I talked about when we were together before was that I think one of the pathways out of poverty, and probably the key pathway out of poverty for children, is through education. And I think it's pretty well established that children do not learn well when they are hungry. They simply don't learn well. They maybe have behavioral problems, and so I think for children to have a decent meal in the morning is really vital. So those programs are, and they've been going on for many years now. I think that, and the volunteers that put them on across the city and across this province, I mean, are really marvelous to be doing that every day of the school year.
Mm-hmm.
And but yes, I think it's a critical part of enabling children to perhaps be able to take a little bit more of a step to get out of that poverty trap that they're in.
Mm. And I was talking with someone as I was preparing for this show, as I mentioned to you, Peter, that even if a child can provide breakfast, oftentimes they do these breakfast programs that include everyone,
mm-hmm.
so that no one is singled out, because right. there is a stigma about, you know, being poor and not able to have that meal at the beginning of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we all know that, I mean, anyone that's had children or has been a child, anyone that has children know that there's a lot of peer pressure around children, and I think they're all sensitive to, you know, whether they are able to do the same things as their peers and so on. And yes, I think that's critically important that they actually are not singled out as much as possible anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell me what has most changed for you. You mentioned, so now you're able to bump into people in the street,
mm-hmm.
say hi, you know, people on first name basis. Has there been something else that's changed in you over the last 4 years and even the last 10 years as you've been involved? What's most changed in you?
Well, I think most of my life I've lived a fairly comfortable existence, and my children have, I don't think, sort of lacked for anything. And I think that most of my immediate circle of friends and their families are all fairly well off, middle class people. So I think seeing the sort of face of poverty firsthand has really given me an opportunity to relate to people who are less fortunate. I think that I'll give you just a personal sort of anecdote. One of my mother's favorite expressions And well, not her favorite expression, but I heard her say it very often, was beggars can't be choosers. Mm. And I used to think, and I think that rubbed off on me for a long time. And so, for example, when I first started volunteering at Chalmers, I volunteer in the clothing area. And so people would come in and they would be looking at sweaters, for example. And, you know, there might be six sweaters there. And some guy might come in and say, well, I don't really like the blue one. I don't really like the brown one. And my first reaction was, well, you know, but they are free, and that, you know, you need a sweater. And what I realized very really quickly was that for a lot of these people, they don't have a great amount of choices in their life. I mean, their options are very limited. I mean, in terms of financially and socially, et cetera, et cetera. So for them to be able to say, well, no, I don't really like that one, and I don't really like that one, I think I'll come back next week or something like that, made me realize very, very early on that this was a place where they could actually make some kind of choice, and they could feel like they had a little bit of control. So I think it's very important that the people who are in those kind of circumstances are given some control, and that they can actually say, no, I don't really want that, or, you know, that's not going to be forced on me. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of level of, there's some dignity around that, I think, that, you know, that I wasn't aware of before. So that's something that's definitely changed in me.
I appreciate you sharing that story. Mm. Thank you. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about the situations in which families and people find themselves in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because, I mean, I think that's something that a lot of people might be surprised about. It can be your neighbor at times that are using these services.
I think the people that are in the business of, in social agencies, talk about a couple of different kinds of poverty. They talk about situational poverty, and they talk about generational poverty. And speaking of situational poverty, we have, I can give you any number of examples of that, but for example, someone may come into Chalmers who had a well-paying job. For example, I had a young fellow a few weeks ago who came in, and he was a computer programmer, and he was making about $40 an hour, so he had a decent paying job, full-time job, and he had a very bad accident where he hurt his back, not at work, so this was not a workers' compensation kind of claim. He was no longer able to sit at a desk, or he was no longer able to do his job. So in a relatively short space of time, he went from earning $4,000 or $5,000 a month to being on ODSB, Ontario Disability, which he gets about $1,000 a month, something like that. Mm. So the change in his circumstances was just almost overnight, and that is the sort of thing that can happen in situational poverty. So people will, through no fault of their own, they have an accident, they are unemployed, they become sick, or one of their family members becomes sick, and maybe they have to give up a well-paying job to look after them. So, and those kinds of things happen, yes. We could probably think of people that are in that situation, and they may be our neighbors. The generational poverty, which is, as it implies, I think it goes from one generation to another. There are sort of definitions around that. Some people say, well, it's when two or more generations have been in poverty, so that there's no sort of institutional memory of not being in poverty in that family. And those are the distressing ones where the children are growing up in poverty, and they themselves, the children, may not have any experience of family members who have never been in poverty. So in those situations, there's maybe more of a sense of helplessness or hopelessness. That, I think, is where our government needs to spend a great deal more, put a great deal more effort, I think, into trying to bring these kind of people out of poverty. And an example of, I mean, a good news example of generational poverty that I saw recently was I met a woman downtown who has been a frequent visitor at Chalmers for the time I've been volunteering there. And when I saw her, and this was downtown, when I saw her, she looked quite different. She looked as if this weight had been lifted off her shoulders. Mm. And so I stopped and talked to her for a second, and she said she had got a permanent job. And by the way, she's married, and she's got two girls who are maybe 10 and 12 or mm-hmm. 11 and 13, something like that. So, and whenever I'd seen her before, she'd really looked down on her luck. She'd looked like she was really weighed down. And so she looked physically different. And she said, I've got this job, and it's in a manufacturing plant in Guelph. I forget the name of the company now. But anyway, she had started this job, and after the second day there, this is what really thrilled her, after the second day there, she had been given sort of permanent status. So in other words, she hadn't gone through the three-month probation. Oh. She'd been hired permanently. So she told her daughters that they still had to wait 3 months before they went to the dentist or they had any medication or whatever, because she still wasn't qualifying for benefits. Mm-hmm. But being hired and being assured of a permanent full-time, secure as it can be, job is one of the sure ways, of course, of people being able to climb out of this poverty trap. And so access to labor is a huge factor for people who are in that situation. Mm. So I felt wonderful that, I mean, I'm not seeing her at Chalmers, and which is great, because I think when we can, when people can be on their way and kind of moving through, out into society and making a real contribution, I mean, they feel so much better, and we all feel better that they're able to do that.
Mm.